This is Tobias Baun.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
And time now to review today's papers. We welcome local filmmaker Justin Coleman. Good morning, Justin.
Good morning, Tobias.
And Happy New Year. Are we still able to say that today on the 6th of January?
I think so. I suspect not everyone's taken their Christmas decorations down yet even.
Well, it's meant to be today, isn't
it? Yeah, I think so.
We did ours ages ago, I must admit.
We started the new year with a fresh, clean house.
I'm exactly the same. But come Boxing Day, I'm sick of them, frankly. There's too many needles on the floor. You know, there's too many bits of glitter and tinsel, and I think it's just time to go, personally. It's a controversial view.
When did you put them up there?
We actually did it quite early this year. Yeah. We did it about the 10th or so, which is early for us. Normally, we try and push it back as late as maybe the 18th, 19th, because I get sick of it.
Yeah.
I like it. It adds a bit of festive cheer. But, you know, you can't dust around that sort of stuff,
can
you?
No, you can't.
That's very important to me.
Yeah.
Anyway, Justin, you've been flicking through the papers for us this morning.
I have indeed, yes.
And you're going to start with a big political story.
Well, yes. Unfortunately, after a lovely Christmas break from talking about the B word, Brexit, we're back there with a vengeance. There's various stories leaking about the next weeks ahead. The main one being that the PM possibly has only 10 days to save her Brexit deal. She's on Andrew Marr's show on the BBC this morning, probably as we speak, in fact, and it's trending on Twitter that the suspicion is that she'll get quite an easy deal from Andrew Marr. There's another interesting element to that show this morning, that Sarah Vine, who's a Daily Mail columnist and Michael Gove's wife, is reviewing their newspapers this morning.
Right.
So I can't tell you what she said of the newspaper, but I do suspect that she's rather pro anything that Michael Gove is rather pro, and of course he's hotly tipped to become the next Prime Minister should Theresa May step down.
Now, we've not placed any of those same restrictions on you this morning, Justin.
No, and I can
talk about what you like.
I'm not married to a member of the Cabinet, so I have no political affiliations to worry about. The general position from Labour is to call for a general election. Obviously, they, with their leader, they're concerned by probably more day-to-day serious things that affect the people across the country rather than sort of, you know, just talking about Brexit only. And I think they're quite keen on a general election to try and solve some of the problems that the country faces.
And they'd rather have that than a second Brexit referendum.
It sounds like it, yeah. One of the Labour whips has said that he thought a second vote would be disrespectful. And to be perfectly honest, I think we know why he's saying that. It's because if they call for a second vote, the Tory party will say it's disrespectful to call for a second vote. So they're just, you know, they're making sure that no one can criticise them for anything in advance.
I have seen various comments online from various people who've said things like, it wouldn't be undemocratic to have a second Brexit referendum because it's just checking the will of the people with the new sort of state of things, if you like. So it doesn't go back on anything that was promised. It just sort of checks now there's more knowledge out there. Do we still go for it in that way? Do you see it that way? Is there much in the papers on that today?
To be honest, I don't think anyone's particularly talking about that at the moment. I think that conversation, obviously, it was quite big in December, and I suspect it will be again February, March time.
You can't see it happening.
I don't know. If you remember before the 2015 election, I think I'm remembering the year correctly, maybe 2016, there's been so many recently. There was a lady famously interviewed in Bristol, asked
Brenda
about a general election. Brenda, there you go. And I'm sure many listeners will remember her remarks that there's just too much politics.
Yep.
And I suspect there's just too many referendums. And so I suspect any sort of a second vote, excuse me, will not be met with great positivity and excitement by many people. However,
it does still get, it's still talked about though by quite a few people, isn't it?
I think that the point is that people are wondering, how do you get out of this situation? The one majority view is that there is not a majority view. That doesn't necessarily mean, to my mind, that having a second vote, which is just a reconfirmation of whether or not there's a majority view, will do anything other than confirm there is still not a majority view. Of course, many people are very passionately against a second vote. Many people are pro a second vote. The bigger question for me is, what would that second vote actually mean? What would the outcome be? Would it be a legally binding vote? Would it be a rerun, which seems rather strange? Mm. Or would it be, yes, as you say, to check what people think on a deal? But of course, before we can vote on a deal, there needs to be a deal in the House of Commons, and at the moment there doesn't look to be a deal anytime soon. We've got less than 100 days now. The PM's got, as it sounds like from Whitehall sources, less than 10 days to actually get a deal through the House of Commons. And by the sounds of it, she's now suggesting that there could be a conditional vote. So a vote on a conditional deal. And just to be clear, that would be the MPs voting on a conditional deal of an outline agreement to begin negotiations for a future relationship. So if you're sick of Brexit, I think there's still some way to go on this.
That's like a meeting to arrange a meeting.
Yes, yeah. Yes, absolutely.
And we're all sick of those.
Yep, we certainly are. But thank goodness we don't have to be MPs.
Let's just quickly move on to another story before we take a quick break, Justin, to do with some announcements about the NHS.
Yeah, so tomorrow is the long-awaited NHS 10-year plan, and there's some various headlines related to this around obesity and mental health. These are widely concerned to be the biggest issues facing the country and the NHS through funding, really, over the next few years. There is a question as to whether or not mental health will be added to waiting list times, etc., which I for one think would be a fantastic step forwards. Although, of course, waiting times, etc., are really only helped by funding. So central government needs to find more money. If you believe what many of the papers are saying, so much money has been taken out of mental health services. I think some extra funding would be good before we just put some deadlines on. Nobody needs to be told to do their job better. They just need more money to do it. Mm. And of course, the other one is obesity. There is a question around secondary costs to obesity. So things like knee operations, hip operations. These have gone up drastically in the last few years, and shockingly in younger and younger people. Now, I can't tell you from the paper review this morning as to whether or not this is strictly around obesity or actually to do with the fact that these operations themselves are both becoming cheaper and more successful, so are being offered to more people. Of course, obesity is likely to go on through the 20th century as a huge challenge to our country, and hopefully the government will take this seriously and give the NHS more money.
Well, coming back to that point, actually, I was hearing something this morning on the drive-in about the concept of burnout of NHS staff. So the staff are trying their absolute best, working as hard as they can to maintain the levels, the high standards of care that everyone wants, but in order to do that, it's becoming harder and harder, working extra shifts, longer hours, and you can only sustain that for so long, can't you, before you burn out yourself?
Yeah, absolutely, and I think we saw this question around the funding for trainee doctors in the last couple of years. It's all very well to say that we want a better service and we want 24/7 care, etc., and of course, as consumers or as taxpayers, as NHS users, we would all agree that that's a good idea, but this is still all about funding. You get the system that you can pay for, and you can't just push staff more and more and more. When you're on the receiving side of care, of course, you have utter respect for anyone that's treating you, but fundamentally these are just people like you and I. They need breaks, they need, you know, the right pay deal. We need the best people looked after in the right state of mind to care for us, and that does fundamentally come down to money. But again, this is one of those issues that's just being overlooked too much because of the B word. And hopefully in a couple of weeks, well, a couple of months' time, we can start talking about things other than Brexit. Although, yeah.
We won't hold our breath just yet.
No, let's not do that.
Justin, thank you. Back with Justin in a minute for part two of our paper review. For now, Christine and the Queens and $5 on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Radio.
Thanks for tuning our way. It's Sunday Brunch with Tobias Spown, and in the newspaper review chair today, local filmmaker Justin Coleman. And I believe, Justin, we're off to Russia for our next story.
We certainly are, or perhaps closer to home, but with a Russian twist. So I'm sure everyone remembers last year the pretty shocking attack orchestrated by the Kremlin, Russian spies in Salisbury using the Novichok nerve agent.
That was never officially confirmed.
Although it seems...
I feel like that, I should say that.
Yes, absolutely. Just in case we get the Kremlin after us. I'm sure they've got bigger spies to chase. Yes, the story in the papers at the moment is that the MI6 is completely confident that they've traced this back to the Kremlin, and they have also, through various counter-intelligence operations, put a bit of a hold on the GRU operations in the UK. And this has allegedly led to Vladimir Putin asking the SVR, who are the Russian equivalent of MI6, to increase operations in the UK, extra funding, and presumably doing things in a slightly more intelligent way than two chaps with sequentially numbered passports coming to Salisbury in the middle of winter and then saying that the snow stopped them, even though there was no snow at the time. So, it feels a bit like a silly sort of Austin Powers-style movie story at times, this stuff, but it is, of course, extremely serious. We're talking about the health of fellow citizens, and we're talking about the security of the nation, frankly. So, I think this will be one to watch and see if there are developments with more serious incidents in the future.
Okay, well, let's move to something a little bit more lighthearted. We've got the Golden Globe Awards happening tonight in the States. An odd one, actually, because it's not just a film award, is it, this one? It's film and television.
Well, that's right. And I think the trend of people watching Netflix and binge-watching TV on various streaming services is leading the Golden Globes to actually be more important, more relevant to a lot of the viewing we do than the Oscars. The Oscars was also blighted with a couple of issues last year, most notably when they announced the new presenter for this year's Oscars, Kevin Hart, who was then, you may know him, he's been in various comedy films with The Rock. He tweeted and was accused of being homophobic. And there was a bit of scandal over this over a few days. And as these things tend to nowadays, there was a chorus of people calling for him to stand down, and he did eventually do that. And while these sorts of incidents have been rocking the Oscars of late, the Golden Globes just looks like they've got their house in order. as I say, is appropriate for the Netflix age, as the Sunday Times says.
Are you a big Netflix viewer?
I am, absolutely. In fact, in the last week or so, my wife and I have binged watched The Crown, all 20 hours of it, which is quite shocking.
Wow.
But, you know...
That's what you're meant to do over Christmas, isn't it?
It is. It's what you're supposed to do. And I don't know why you would watch, other Sunday evening television, midweek telly, etc. Just put on your favourite thing for a couple of hours every night and ignore the mainstream.
The trouble with that is it then runs out really quickly.
That is exactly the problem, and you're left devastated. Yep. They've only made 20 hours of this great
and you want
drama.
More. How does it work with adverts? Do you get interrupted during the show?
No, you don't. There are pre-roll adverts on certain things on Prime, I know, and there are the Netflix menu now will sort of trail new things for you. But no, you can just skip from one to the next. And my favourite feature, absolutely, of Netflix is the ability to skip the credits and skip the menus, so you can just keep on with the story. 20 hours of story in a row, no interruptions.
That does sound good. So who are the major nominees, potentially? Do you know any of them? I know that the Bohemian Rhapsody has been doing quite big things nomination-wise for some of those awards, but there's odd categories. It's musicals, it's dramas, it's comedies, it's all sorts of things like that up for Best Picture. picture, I think, isn't it?
Yes, I think that's right. I'm just hastily catching up with who's been nominated for what.
There was The Bodyguard that was nominated for something. Did you watch any of that?
No. Yes, actually, we did see that, yes.
Was that good? Because that made a big splash, didn't it, at the time?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was a fantastic series, and obviously written by the same person who wrote Line of Duty. Fantastic series, brilliant acting, fantastic characterisation, and another one of those interesting looks into a world that we don't normally see. Mm. I think, yes, so that's Richard Madden. He's been nominated. Benedict Cumberbatch has also been nominated, and Hugh Grant for A Very English Scandal.
Ah, yes, of course, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because a lot of these names that perhaps you know from the movies, actually, the biggest things they're now being nominated for are TV appearances.
Mm. And I guess there used to be an issue of hierarchy, didn't it? It was more glamorous, more important to do a film. Whereas now I think TV is really raising its game in that way and becoming just as desirable a thing to feature on.
I think that's right. I mean, you know, this obviously dates back to the 1940s and 50s when the studios owned both the talent, the equipment and the cinemas. So being in a movie was absolutely the most prestigious thing that you could do on screen. Of course, fast forward to today and our viewing habits are totally different. People are not going to the cinema as they once were, and we are, in fact, all sitting and watching our very lovely large screen TVs at home. And so, of course, as we've just talked about, we have a huge appetite for longer form story, and that means 90 minutes might not satisfy it. You know, that's a lot of individual movies to watch in a week, whereas if you've got a good drama, you can stretch over maybe 7 days if they've done 2 seasons, that's much more appealing. So I think this is, you know, it's not just the shock of Oscar presenters saying the wrong things on Twitter. This is also very much that the Golden Globes does represent the sorts of things we're currently watching.
Lovely. All right, one final story from you, Justin. We've got about a minute or so to squeeze this one in. We wanted to go to outer space for our final piece this morning.
Yes, so this is actually really big news, but and it was reported in the week, but I guess it's because nobody's entirely sure what to make of it. China, for the first time in human history, has landed a probe on the far side of the moon. This is, according to various commentators in newspapers, this is really about putting Chinese technology and Chinese engineering in the public eye. Back in the 50s, 60s and 70s, when this was a Russian and American-dominated space, this wasn't really about, any particularly positive direct, industrialization, if you like, of space. This was about making statements of who was leading the world, who could solve the hardest problems of humanities, and who the other nations, neutral nations, as the US administration saw them, who they should look to for world leadership. And I think this is China's attempt at saying, it's our turn, it's our century, we can do something America hasn't even done.
So they've landed on the dark side of the moon.
They have landed on the dark side
and
of the moon.
And a photograph I saw, someone aptly described it on online as, looks like my navel, which I thought was quite good. Because it does, doesn't it?
I think that person should perhaps make an appointment to see their GP this week. But surprisingly, it looks very much like the side of the moon we're used to seeing. It's just that it's a bit darker. So obviously the photos were taken at the time when it was illuminated. So yes, I don't know what they're hoping to find there. I think this is, yes, not about what they found. It's about what they're telling the rest of us on Earth. So, genuinely a really incredible achievement and an interesting story. It will be interesting to see if Russia or America attempt to respond by announcing plans for a big new space program of their own.
We will watch this space.
Very good.
I like it. Justin Coleman, thank you very much for your time this morning. Thanks for coming in to review the papers today.
Thank you.
Thank you.